Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, my friends, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend, Robert Earl. Our journey continues, Robbie. Our She-Hulk journey continues. My rewatch of the MCU continues.
Yeah.
So
where are we today?
So I watched The Incredible Hulk, to which all of my haters will be happy. I did watch it. I included it. And I watched Thor. So literally the worst two MCU movies in a row. You go through a little rough patch there.
Yeah.
With Iron Man 2 and The Incredible Hulk and Thor. But I made it through alive, and I have some thoughts on it. But first, how are you doing? What's new with you?
I'm doing well. I actually have some really exciting news to share that you and I have talked about a little bit offline, but have not brought up on the show yet.
I don't know what this is.
I know.
I'm giddy. What is it?
So Friends from Work, at least in part, is going to be attending New York Comic Con this year.
Oh, that's right.
Which is just like 3 weeks away, 2 weeks away, dude. Basically. We've been talking about trying to make something like this happen for a while. And we had folks ask about us doing San Diego and D23. And you and I were both traveling some over the summers. And we had just gone out for Thor in LA. And so it was kind of hard to do back-to-back things. But it worked out. You were, unfortunately, I think, at a wedding the weekend of NYCC.
Yes.
So I have somehow convinced Candace to attend with me. And the guest list is pretty crazy. When we were first looking at this, it was still pretty impressive just on a comics front. But if you're listening and you're at a spot where you can Google without endangering your life or the lives of others around you, you should go look at it because it's pretty fun. Like Oscar Isaac's going to be there. Sebastian Stan is going to be there.
That's wild.
Basically, all of the head folks at Marvel Comics right now are going to be there. There's also a lot of kind of non-Marvel stuff.
Robbie Earl is going to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, that allegedly is pretty wild. This is hopefully just step one in our ultimate journey to be at all these, right?
Yeah.
That's the hope.
Well, and that's, yeah, I am excited because that's something that we're trying to incorporate more. And we've actually been... The one thing I'm bummed about is we've been trying to get up to New York for a bit, in part to hang with our boy Pete. And
that's so true.
He is...
You're not going to see him.
He's not going to be there. But if you are, you're listening to this, and we've had a couple of folks talk about us coming up to New York, so if you're one of those people, I feel like there's at least a decent chance that you're maybe looking at going to Comic-Con as well.
You need to connect with some listeners.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so message us and we'll see what we can make happen. But this is a great time to remind people also ahead of that you should follow us on Twitter and other social media, but particularly Twitter, because I think it's going to be a really fun time to live tweet some of the interview opportunities and also a couple of the panels we're going to that I think will be really fun, particularly for comics listeners. But I think there's also going to be some interesting stuff on the entertainment front. There's a Lord of the Rings panel, Kyle, which...
Oh, wow.
You know, so...
It's made for you.
Made
also,
for
me. You're just going to New York in general.
I know.
Mean, that's also kind of your stomping grounds when you factor in Captain America and Spider-Man.
Wow, right? True.
remember the last time I was there too, like I texted you, there just, there is true. A special MCU-ness to it,
yeah.
right? If you're looking for it, it feels kind of fun.
And it's going to be in the fall, which is always kind of my favorite time to be in New York. It's true. My favorite time to be anywhere that isn't Texas, honestly, but I was looking, true. Even now they've got some temps in the 50s and I'm like, okay, I will, we can trade for a week, but.
Totally.
So yeah, that's what's going on with me.
Yeah, have fun. I'm bummed I can't be there, but we'll make it work in the future.
In the future.
Step one. All right, so let me quick give a tiny recap to my Incredible Hulk thoughts and mm-hmm. Thor thoughts. It's been a while since I've watched some of these films, so it's been really fun. Again, mm-hmm. reminder, I'm turning off all of the distractions. I'm watching this on the biggest screens possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting with a fresh ranking. And I'm separating out my rankings. And I actually have gotten to a couple of interesting ones here. First of all, The Incredible Hulk is much better than I remember.
Wow. He said it. He said it.
It's much better than I remember it being. Even the stuff I'd poke fun of is not as cringy as I thought. Like mm-hmm. even the sex jokes with the fitness watch. Like,
yeah.
It's not as bad as I remember. I have five thoughts. I'll go through these quickly. Number two, Blonsky, you are not entirely a victim, right? Like in She-Hulk, we're led to believe that, you know, he was just trying to be bloody Captain America. Okay, that's true. I get it. But also, he sadistically likes it. He crosses the boundary way too many times to feel comfortable. So
yeah, I think I think it leaves it in an interesting spot where I can kind of see it from both sides, because I do feel like watching it back, if I remember, and it's been like a year since I've seen that one, but I feel like Ross poses to him like, you know, how would you like to be able to basically feel like a man that's 10 years younger or whatever.
But then he says like he feels like a god or something like that. It gets intense.
No, but that was my take, is like once he actually gets the serum in him or whatever they're injecting, I feel like that's when it's like a John Walker kind of a situation.
I forgot that there was kind of two injections. That first he gets just a tiny little dose and he kind of becomes Captain America. He just runs fast. It's very similar to the run in Infinity War mm-hmm. with Black Panther. But then later is when he tries to amp it up, and that's when it turns into an abomination. I had forgotten that. Third thing, man, it always sucks in these movies to be the other significant other. Like, so Liv Tyler's character has this amazing boyfriend that she just instantly leaves behind. I mean, she sees one glimpse at him and just leaves him at the pizza place. And just, she's out forever. And the boyfriend's always just kind of like, okay, yeah, I get it. Like, and that happens a lot in these movies. It always just sucks for those people.
Yeah.
Number four, Ross is such a scumbag.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot how much he's kind of the quote unquote villain there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit surprising that he would eventually get promoted to the role he gets promoted in based off just this movie. Cause he's kind of, I mean, he totally alienates his daughter mm-hmm. and his family. He crosses a lot of boundaries just like Blonsky does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really all just so he can make a weapon. It's not like Bruce is doing something super bad that has to be contained.
Right.
It's like all out of aggression. He's kind of a scumbag.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm still so impressed with the way that they handled that in Civil War, because you had a little bit of connective tissue with the post-credit scene that just showed he was at least familiar with Tony, like they ran in the same circles, so you could kind of see how he would just be a guy that's well known in that like weapons industry world and like government side of that.
Sure.
So you could kind of see like maybe there was a political side of it, but yeah, I mean, he's such a straight, a straight villain for sure in that movie.
My fifth and final thought. By the way,
doesn't it kind of make you sad that we lost the opportunity to see that character progress with the Thunderbolts? Because I feel like that sets that up so well.
Blonsky?
No, Ross.
Sure.
Just, you know, with William Hurt's passing,
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
I wonder if that would have been the plan.
Yeah, that he again pushes the envelope a little too much and has to go towards the Thunderbolt side instead of...
Right.
Huh, interesting. My last thought, the very final fight is like incredibly violent between Abomination and Incredible Hulk, and it's happening on top of a roof. And somehow, at the very end, a bunch of civilians walk out of nowhere and look at him on the roof. They're like watching the fallout. And I'm thinking, what are they doing there? Who would just be drawn to this? Where did they come from? Are they coming out of the apartment building they're destroying? Like, it's not on the ground. It's on the roof. And then secondly, why are you walking right next to the Abomination? Like, they're trying to, like, show this, like, shock and horror thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, guys, clear the area. Clearly at this point. It's like, if you don't have a heads up, what's going on here, mommy? It's like all these worried kids looking at it. And then... I had an interesting thing with this and Thor. I think I'm actually going to put Incredible Hulk ahead of Thor on my just critical list.
Wow.
Just critical list.
Wow.
Preference-wise, I'm going to go Thor one spot ahead because I still think it's maybe a little bit easier for me to get through Thor just because I wonder if it was either Mark Ruffalo from the beginning or if it was Edward Norton that stayed the Hulk, if I would view this movie even more fondly. Because it's just hard for me to, like, recast a character. It just is. It feels like I'm not watching the same MCU for a second.
No, for sure. I think I've had that same thought. And I've had the same reaction when I've gone back and watched it. The only reason it's been so easy for me to rank that one so low, I mean, it would still be ranked in the lower portion for sure, but it is that, like, there's just has been a lack of connectivity. Now, you know, given the Blonsky reappearance and the leader who is showing up in Captain America, if not in She-Hulk, based on this week's episode, that may change. You know, like, there may ultimately be enough connectivity to, if not totally overcome it, really push it up a bit for me.
All right, last thought, then trivia, then She-Hulk, okay? That's the plan.
Yep.
Thor is a tough movie to get through, man. Like, I'm not trying to be hot takey. I'm not trying to be funny. Mm. I love the MCU with all my heart. I'm not trying to get crushed for saying this. It's just not a very good movie. It really isn't. It doesn't age very well, especially when you watch it compared to Iron Man or even Iron Man 2. Like, yeah. The jokes don't work, the appetite for apathy thing, the flipping of the tables. There's like so many Dutch angles. The cinematography's not great. Uh-huh. The line writing isn't great. Thor is not settled in. Chris Hemsworth is not settled in.
Right.
Jane is maybe more settled in to me than Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Darcy and Selvig are highlights. They're like standout in the positive way for me. But there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't work, man. Like, it's not great. I'm sorry. So it's just funny in context of Love and Thunder that anybody would think we need to go back to that vibe. No, this is clearly a worse movie than the most recent Thors.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's so funny is now I think you could argue that Hemsworth and Hiddleston are two of the bigger names within the MCU in terms of big followings. And yeah, I feel like the first Thor is so much of Hemsworth and Hiddleston that you would think that would be a good thing. But that iteration of both characters is just not.
Yeah, Loki's not right either. He gets right in the Avengers. I remember that, but.
Yeah.
This is, again, why it's going to be so fascinating to get to Dark World in my viewing, because it's just a better movie other than the ridiculous plot, like, which is a huge deal.
Right.
It's so much better in every other way. It's just, it's wild. Okay, anyways, I can't stay on this forever. To me, those are the lowest two graded movies back to back. And so here we go. Trivia. By the way, last week's Iron Man 2 trivia, a lot of you guessed it. Justin Hammer has his ice cream flown in from
San Francisco.
It's Italian, though. Yes, San Francisco was the correct answer, which was really timely. That's why you made that joke, because I was in San Francisco. Just Iron Man 2 is so good still. So sue me.
Wow.
So sue me.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Okay, here we go. Trivia from Incredible Hulk. It's a little bit different this time. You need to finish this quote. I'm going to go a little more difficult here. This is a really obscure thing. Okay, here we go. I'll set the scene for you first. First person to get this correct will get a Friends from Work t-shirt. It's right when Blonsky is going to get his injections. And he's talking to Ross, and there's a doctor there. And this is what the line is. You'll get two separate infusions. One, and you got to finish what's happening. Really deep cut. I'm doing something different.
I know the line you're talking about, and I know the way it ends, but I don't know the full line.
Okay, because I think the reason it ends the way it does is why I'm bringing it up now, because it's, I can't say it, but we'll talk about it next week.
I mean, I just remember that delivery always being great.
Okay, exactly.
Because there's, we'll talk about it next week.
Next week, stay tuned.
That's a good one.
Okay, and then here's my Thor trivia question.
Uh-huh.
How many Dutch angles are used? No, I'm just kidding. Okay, here we go. S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up and takes all of Jane's stuff, right?
Right.
What was Darcy so concerned about losing?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
These are fun, right?
These are fun. These are good.
All right, so first person, I'm mailing two shirts this week. All right, last thing, and then I'll stop talking and you can take the lead on She-Hulk. I watched the Thor Love and Thunder Assembled. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it yet.
You know
I'm still
how I like
trying
those.
To get caught up on all the other TV stuff that's going on.
There's a lot. It's really fun again. A couple things really quickly.
Yeah.
In some ways, it actually made me like a few of the things less than I did.
Oh, interesting.
Like, this is the first time I can remember feeling like getting the curtain pulled back actually ruined a little bit of it for me. It's like when you cut through the back hallways at Disney and you see an employee smoking or something, it's like, oh, that's what this felt like a tiny bit. They shot a few key scenes with this new technology called the volume. They used it on the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yep. But it's actually like a 360 digital projection. So they build the set, like the very first fight that Thor and the Guardians have, they build that out. But then all the stuff in the background is actually being projected to the actors. So it really is supposed to help pull out better performances from the actors, because they feel like they're actually there. Because like as far as their eye can see, it is that world.
Right. Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that's what that was.
Yeah, so it's not a blue screen or a green screen. It's an actual like monitor surrounding them. However, when I saw it, I thought, that's really cool. I understand pulling out better performances. It almost was all the times, though, when I felt like maybe the CGI looked a little goofy in the movie was whenever they were using the volume now. Now that I know that, like the goat boat ride is the volume. And I get it. It helps like Jane and Thor like look out and see dolphins, right? They're actually seeing that.
Right.
So that helps them. But I don't know. I feel like that's maybe the time it looked a little off to me. And some of the times when I saw that they just blue screened it, it looked better to me. I know it's crazy.
Interesting. Would the volume have any – so how much does it affect the ultimate visuals or effects that we see versus just affect the – experience of the actors on set?
A lot, because they don't have a blue screen to then go back and replace it all.
Oh,
they can like
I
amp
see.
It up and mess with it, but it's not like a blue wall. You know what I'm saying? There's
right.
No way to describe it.
Interesting. Okay,
so
yeah,
like you're kind of committing to some of the look right then and there when you're doing it.
Okay.
And they can change it and all that stuff, but like, I don't know. Now seeing it, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like whenever I felt like a little weird about it, it was the volume moments actually now in hindsight. I just like checking it because it like trains my eye of what am I seeing or not.
Do you know if that's what they used for the battle, like the black and white battle?
And no. And that is exactly my other note. which is that
interesting.
They have a whole section on the black and white battle, and it's a new lighting thing. I can't even explain it here. You'll have to watch it. They use a new kind of lighting that's never been used in film before. And it's hard to even explain. It's like a full 360 with LED lights that light from all angles, but somehow the camera is recording all of it at once. So the director can go back and choose what angle he wants the light from at all times on every shot.
Oh, that's cool.
So they could like make it black and white and like, you'll have to go watch it. It's really hard to explain, but they make a point of saying this has never been done. That's the time where I'm like, holy crap. They pulled it off like insane, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
So I wonder if we'll get more of that technology because it was so successful there. And then lastly, new Asgard.
Oh, yeah.
It looks
yeah.
so cool because it actually is built. That's the third. Right. So it's the three options. Either the scenes are the volume or they're just blue screened and they use this new lighting like on the moon or it was built out. Like New Asgard. And New Asgard's incredibly built out. Like 15 facades of buildings.
Wow.
Actually. Including infinity cones and whatnot.
That's
wow, that's a lot of talking for me. Sorry.
No, man, I think it's so interesting. And this is one thing that I'd be genuinely curious to hear folks weigh in on that listen to this podcast, because I feel like they're sort of uniquely qualified as MCU fans that are fans enough to listen to this podcast. Like I'm so curious to see how Love and Thunder holds up, you know, like you were talking about the original Thor, and
does it age like fine wine?
Man, I'm curious because I think like the first Thor movie, and I'm not going to go, this will be another conversation for another time, but that's why I'm kind of curious to get other people's thoughts. Like, we've talked about this tendency to go back and kind of retroactively redeem things like the prequels or Thor or something. But like, I vividly remember going to see Thor and as, again, someone that would be inclined to like that kind of movie, not liking it.
Really? Yeah,
like when it was in theaters.
Like the first time you saw it, you were like, okay, this is fine.
Like, I didn't hate it, but I was not like it made me more nervous about the Avengers. Like, I've talked about how I was nervous about the Avengers initially because I was like, eh. And at that point, I had heard that Loki was going to be the villain. So I was doubly like, yikes. And then obviously, like, both of those things wound up being great. But like, I don't know. I just think it's so funny this, like, we're in this weird phase with the way that we receive media where I'm like, we pour over things in this way based on like expectations, and we have conversations and things are memed, and then things are like re-memed based on the first layer of memeing. And I'm just wondering, like, how much does that impact the way that we receive a movie like Love and Thunder and Multiverse of Madness, like the conversation that happens online, the expectation game, and will that change something
over time?
Yeah, like will it change the, like, I wonder if.
Or if they make Thor 5 and it's not Taika, will people then retroactively go back and be like, actually, Love and Thunder was his best work?
Right. Yeah.
Because that's what happens with Spider-Man.
True, true. Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many, I find that stuff fascinating, like figuring out why things hit the way they do. Like I know some people that have told me that Thor Love and Thunder was immediately one of their favorite Marvel movies, easily. And then I've talked to some people that just like did not enjoy it at all.
I mean, we remember colleagues at the Love and Thunder premiere. I mean, we remember Miles Teller walking out talking about it all excited, remember?
Yeah.
And we saw Brandon Davis and he was like, this is one of the best Thor movies ever made. And I remember some of the direct guys and the new Rockstar guys, like they were all like, this is incredible day of.
Right. But that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Then it enters the conversation and then it gets whatever like story kind of gets run with. Then everyone feels like they have to kind of qualify or react to that. And I'm not saying that, I'm not even just defending the movie. Like when we talk about the way that I initially felt with like Endgame and No Way Home, which are super high up on my list now, and which is why I think this, I don't even know what this would look like, but this is another conversation for another downtime. But I'm curious, like specifically with Thor, how people think that will age and hold up, just since you're talking about the Kenneth Branagh of it all, because I had the same thought whenever I watched Thor in preparation for Love and Thunder.
All right, so let's hear your thoughts on that. Join our Slack, by the way. That's a good place to post those.
Yeah,
or follow us on Twitter, like we said, at the FFW Podcast. We'd love to hear from you there. And Robbie and I are in the early beta testing of some new video parts of our podcast. And it's really exciting because I'm looking at you right now while you're wondering those things. And it's so captivating just watching you think about it. But our audience has never gotten to see that. So I can't wait for people to see that. So stay tuned on those fronts. We'll see. Anyways, those were some random thoughts. Let's get into She-Hulk Episode 6. And our She-Hulk coverage is brought to you by our friends at Epic Hero Shop and Squarespace.
Yeah, it is. Which, if you were watching this video, you would see we are both sporting some Epic Hero Shop. You can't see mine quite, but I've got the Love and Thunder shirt on. Look at that. I didn't even know.
And I'm wearing my Superhuman Law Division shirt. Very appropriate.
We actually, like, we planned perfectly for the topics of today's podcast.
And as a lot of our viewers now know, Daredevil did not make an appearance yet in She-Hulk. But our friends at Epic Hero Shop,
that didn't
stop them. They're already churning out some incredible Daredevil shirts from just that trailer. I'm amazed at how quick they come up with these designs and how amazing the designs are for how quick it was.
Yeah.
So once Daredevil is on the show, be ready. Get your Epic Hero Shop Daredevil shirt, epicheroshop.com, and tell them we sent you by using our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK.
Yep. Which, speaking of Daredevil and She-Hulk, right before we jump in here, reminder that the reading that we're doing for the next Comics Corner includes a couple issues of the Mark Waid Daredevil series that we talked about some on here where he is on the West Coast. So if you're looking, now that you know you have another week before he shows up, I would encourage you to check those out. You can find the list on our Patreon, and that's, of course, where we will have the episode discussing it here in a little bit.
And if you are looking into building a website, please check out squarespace.com. They have been so helpful for Robbie and I. Our Friends From Work website, the FFW Podcast, is via Squarespace. Our individual bands and music websites are through Squarespace. Your wife, Candace, uses Squarespace. If you go to squarespace.com and use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, you'll get a free trial and you'll save money off a website and domain. P.S., all of this merch that we ship, these Thor Love and Thunder shirts that we have, these Friends From Work shirts that I give out, all done on Squarespace. It's really cool. They have a commerce site on there. I track all my inventory on there. I can change the prices on there. And then that goes directly to my shipping thing. So I can print my label at home. It's incredibly convenient. I love it. So that's just one of the many tools they have. Squarespace.com/friendsfromwork.
I'm sold. She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, Episode 6 is entitled Just Jen. It was directed again by friend of Friends From Work, Anu Valia. It was written this time by Kara Brown. I believe, other than those first two, have we had, we've had different writers pretty much every other week so far. Again, we had largely the same crew here, but arguably an even larger role from Jameel as Titania. And we did have the introduction of some new characters that we'll talk about here in a bit, namely Mr. Immortal, who some folks will recognize from Book of Boba Fett. Kyle, I don't think, is one of those people, but I am, as somebody that got conned into watching all of Book of Boba Fett.
I've watched 3 episodes and I never finished. That's so pathetic, but I couldn't do it. Anyway,
but
stop.
You're better for it. Okay. So here's what happened.
I will say, briefly, I was setting up a new TV and I thought to myself, I need to go to something that looks amazing to tune this TV. I went to Rogue One. I went to Rogue One to test the visuals. Gosh, I love that movie. Come on.
Hey, have you watched any of Andor yet?
Not yet, but I will. I cannot accurately portray in this podcast how busy my life has been. I am recording this again from North Georgia, a cabin. I have literally gone nonstop. And just so you know, I'm going to Jackson, Mississippi next week. And then the following week, I'll be in Seattle, Washington. And then I'm done. Then I'm home free. Sorry. So I'll catch up, I promise, at some point.
I actually haven't watched it either. Something else I'd be curious to hear our folks' thoughts on. But that, you know, with the Rogue One connection, I was curious. Okay. Episode 6 starts off again really cleverly with Jen telling the audience this is going to be a self-contained wedding episode, recognizing that we're all expecting a Daredevil cameo and just straight up telling us that that isn't coming. And I thought the line about, yeah, if this seems like an inconvenient time to have a wedding episode, that's how weddings always are. So that's what we get. On the one hand, we get Jen going to this wedding where she thinks she's going to show up as She-Hulk and kind of wow everybody. She gets there and is told she has to be Jen so she doesn't steal the spotlight. And then she is basically, it's another case of this like, man, are people really this mean? But she is just like made to do all the dirty work all weekend and is just generally not treated well. Mm-hmm. And ultimately meets a guy that I'm sort of excited to talk about here in a second. And they kind of hit it off. And after a battle with Titania that causes Jen to transform back into She-Hulk, we kind of end that episode with her happily eating late night fries with this mysterious Josh figure that she has met. As that's zooming out.
Yes.
We see some interesting things. There's like an interface there that somebody's looking at named Hulk King. And we see like a vial of something. And, you know, on this episode, they reminded us about the Jen's blood thing that we've talked about. Yeah, the scene with Bruce and the scene where the guy tried to stab her. But also, we're seeing some elements here that we now know are associated with the intelligentsia. And that's because the other half of what's going on in this episode is this kind of fun story with Nikki and Mallory, where they have this new client. Again, this is what I love about the show. Mr. Immortal, who some comics readers will recognize from the Great Lakes Avengers. And he is a person that can basically die an endless amount of times.
He dies a little bit.
Do you really think she has a law degree and doesn't know what the word immortal means? But so he has been using that power to get out of countless marriages. So they are handling that. And in the process, kind of after celebrating their success, they bump into this intelligentsia site that one of the ex-wives had cited. And that is how we learn that there is this whole site of ostensibly, you know, troll type guys that are
with death
wanting
threats.
That are posting all this anti She-Hulk stuff to the point of death threats. And so our storylines merge there in that final scene we were just talking about, and that's where it leaves us.
So this episode will be really easy for me to break down because I have a few funny parts that I laughed at that we can just briefly go over. I have a couple of thoughts that are minor. And then really, I want to lean on you for some of these bigger question things here towards the end. Cause
yeah,
there's a few of those things too. So quickly, briefly, just surface level, few things. I really love that first song that plays when she gets out of the car as She-Hulk at the wedding, the rehearsal dinner, I think. So cool. The MCU continues to be great. King, to be honest, at playing pop music in their shows.
Yeah.
So cool. I laugh really hard when they're all like gushing over her and Lulu's like, everyone's got an ass. Okay. loved the title card saying just Jen instead of She-Hulk this time. That was a fun, new, different thing. I really thought Titania shined here in Jameel. This was my favorite Titania we've had.
Totally agree. I thought the same thing.
Okay, so the chit-chat's over.
Okay, you're being very loud.
Very loud. Yeah, it's so demeaning, yet really subtle in the demeaning.
Which also makes the whole, like, her just getting crushed scene at the end, like, very satisfying.
Totally. Totally. DJ Incredible Hulk?
Yes.
Ched was so funny to me. The air horn always makes me laugh. The is never not going to work. And I love when he goes, we got a wedding fight. Like, no, like, he's not flustered at all. He just gets right into it. It reminded me of Iron Man 2, you know, the dance fight that we just, but this probably more effective because it is more lighthearted in this fight. I really don't want Josh to be bad. I think he's going to be, but I liked the way he interacted with Jen. I think it'd actually be kind of a fun, fresh take to not have him be bad, but I'm afraid it's going to be that he actually is working on the bad side. I loved the Mallory and Nikki side stuff. I thought the chemistry was great there. Thought that was pretty funny. And that's about it. So now let me get to the heavier stuff. That was kind of all the fun things, etc. So Mr. Immortal. What do I need to know about him? Is it going to be a bigger thing than just this episode? Or are they just finding characters to make fun Easter eggs because they are the superhuman law division?
I think it's more the latter. And that's, again, that's, this episode is another great kind of microcosm of what I think you either love or hate about She-Hulk. And even, you know, again, I love Daredevil. I'm really excited to see Daredevil show up. That in no way took away from my enjoyment of this episode that he wasn't in it, because I love this. Like, I love this. Like, here's a new kind of superhero guy with a new superhero problem, and the superhuman law division is going to deal with it. Even when Jen's kind of having her own kind of more personally focused story. Like, I love it. Like, I love what they're giving us, but I also recognize that if you're wanting something that is more clearly linear and moving at a different pace and or is just more serious in tone, like, I totally get why that wouldn't be the case. Like, I could see why it's funny. Like, this episode, I think, could be evidence for either party for whatever argument you're making.
I guess I would say back to that, I think those people are probably not still watching, right? Like, at this point, if you haven't learned what the tone is, like, you either don't like it and then don't watch it, or you're liking it.
But I think, and I've also been busier than I want to be. And so the blessing of that is that I haven't had time to swim in the cesspool that is Marvel Twitter. But I did see rumblings of people being upset because of the Daredevil stuff. And I do wonder if, like, what we were talking about, I'm sure there are people that loved the Daredevil show. They loved how dark the Daredevil show is. And even if they're wanting to hate watch it, they are coming back to this, or were maybe checking it out in hopes of seeing Matt show up after the tease last week. So I think that's maybe part of that.
Part of me wishes that never got out, that they didn't put that in any promo ever.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if they never included it and then they just caught us totally off guard and he walked in episode 7 and we had no inclination.
Or
you
even
don't get
just
this Mephisto
tease.
Thing then.
Yeah. Yep. No, it's, but you know, again, I think I get it. It's just, this show is, it's doing this thing so well. And I think the reason I got on this is the Mr. Immortal question, because in the comics, he is of one of these kind of D-list characters that is normally like the punchline of a joke. He's never
like here.
He's not really a character that you would ever kind of build anything around. It's almost like a Howard the Duck type person in terms of what people that maybe aren't super familiar with comics would know. And so that, yeah, this used it perfectly well, and I don't see a world in which they would really need to return to that.
On just a plot level, and by the way, I say all that as someone who is a fan of Daredevil and is excited to see him show up, but it doesn't ruin the show for me if he's not there until the last episode, because I'm enjoying it as is already a lot. On a plot level, most of the people in the MCU to this point, and this goes back to my hesitation on the X-Men and mutants in general, is that whenever there's a super-powered individual, there's so few of them that we're pretty much able to go back and trace the origin of every super-powered individual.
Right.
Like, we know where they're coming from. Obviously, this show is kind of breaking that mold with, like, Titania. Like, we don't know why she's super strong.
Right.
Now here comes Mr. Immortal. Are these mutants? Or where are these people getting their powers from? Is this the beginning of just saying that people are genetically mutating into these stronger people?
That it's, I thought about that because, yeah, for the longest time, the MCU was really tight with that stuff. You know, like there was an explanation in universe for everything. And this is not them not being tight with it. It's just them not even really trying to offer an explanation.
Right. Like Captain America was the only one and they couldn't recreate the serum. And like, that's why he's strong.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think I meant last week when I was talking about She-Hulk being such a step forward in making the MCU feel like the Marvel Comics universe. Because I think, like, that's it. It's this, and I think it's necessary, frankly. Like, it's the way that people are approaching superhumans as a known entity and not as, like, not the same way that they initially looked at the Avengers, for instance, where it was this kind of god-tier class of people. Like, it's becoming something that people are more comfortable with. Now, like, I don't know if you asked me in a vacuum if that's what I would want, but given how many projects we've gotten, like, it would be weird if that weren't the case. You know, like, we can't have a scene like in The Incredible Hulk where people are so shocked now to see super people around whenever it's just such a massive part of everyone's life, especially post-Endgame.
As far as preference goes, me being the power levels guy,
right,
I totally don't mind as long as they all kind of stay D-list super-powered people, right? Like, I don't think that this guy, Mr. Immortal, we have any indication that he's trying to do anything other than get out of these divorces. I don't think he's like trying to take over the world or start a secret organization, or like if Captain America showed up, he could probably dispatch of him pretty easily, for example. So that helps take that threat out of my brain, which is nice.
Well, and it's interesting, right? Because it creates opportunities for there to be corners of the MCU that we haven't seen that are existing that don't feel like, I think because the MCU was so tight with that stuff for a while, then whenever stuff came along where it was like, oh, no, this has been going on forever, it was a little like, like that. Yeah. But now it's like, okay, well, if we're saying that there's been stuff happening,
totally.
One, you know, it enhances in that way. And two, it kind of, in a weird way, makes the Avengers and co. feel more significant, because it's not just that they're superpowered people. It's that they're superpowered people that have kind of chosen to be heroes, as cheesy as it sounds.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, like, it's not just that, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know that I hate the idea that there are other superpowered people out in the world that aren't either like heroes or villains. You know, like, there would just be people that are just out like using it in their own life.
my brain actually goes to that other sorcerer in Doctor Strange who chose to just walk again instead of actually something else, where it's like he learned it, he got the knowledge, and then just decided he wanted to walk and play basketball and didn't actually want to go beyond that. That's what this feels like, kind of,
which is interesting. No, that's a great point.
All right, second major point of three.
Mm-hmm.
So intelligentsia. I caught online the brief Twitter searching that I did and our Slack searching that already some sleuths found out in Age of Ultron, Ulysses Klaue, in his like profile, it actually says that he was a member of this organization, Intelligentsia, which is really cool to me. But is this a comics thing? Do I need to know more than what I know now? Or is it just like a whatever?
Yeah. Yeah, this is interesting. It's definitely more than Mr. Immortal. You know, I say, and then they're going to announce like five Mr. Immortal movies or something. But the Intelligentsia is like a villain group in the comics. And you know, notably, that group has featured the leader at times, who we were just talking about from The Incredible Hulk. And so I think that given the speculation that we've had going back a ways, which I'm, you know, kind of proud of us for, that the leader could show up.
You did. Yeah. Not me.
That seems, you know, it was a group. Was a group
effort. We're all doing stuff. We're all contributing.
What's the Love and Thunder line?
Team effort, guys. Know what I'm actually thinking of? This is way deep. Have you ever seen the Blue Harvest stuff? The Family Guy Star Wars trilogy?
Yeah.
One of the funniest jokes ever is when they finish blowing up the Death Star and Luke Skywalker comes back and everything's happening. the guy comes up and goes, they're all like, you did it, you did it. He's like, I made sandwiches. And then Luke Skywalker's like, yeah, man, you're doing stuff. Like, you're contributing to this.
My favorite line from that special, I think it's the first one, is, I mean, because so much of it's straight, like, the dialogue is often pulled straight from the movies.
Oh, it's some of the funniest stuff ever.
And the one when Luke is talking to Han, like, when they're first in the Millennium Falcon, and he's like, you don't believe in the Force, do you? And Han's like, oh, you mean this thing you found out about, like, 15 minutes ago and are now judging me for not believing?
Yeah. Something. Dark side, something complete. Okay, well, last thing. My favorite thing ever is they shoot the first Death Star and it pans to the tunnel where the laser is coming out and there's two guys in there. And in the real movie, there's two guys standing right there, like on the edge of an abyss.
Uh-huh.
And it stays on. They're like, I just want one railing. That's all I've been asking for is one railing. You know what they told me? What? They said we'd be leaning all day. Oh, typical. Like, that's all they're talking about. And it's so true, because, like, in the movie, there's this huge drop-off, and the guys are just standing there. I just wanted one railing. It's unbelievably genius, by the way. Anyways, that's what that made
really
me think
of. Like, yeah, it's surprisingly funny still the last few times I've seen it. Okay. But yeah, I mean, so this one I think actually has legs. The Intelligentsia. I mean, it is a legitimate supergroup that has seen folks like from the leader to Dr. Doom in the comics, and so I mean that's as we are looking towards, you know, a world where maybe some of these high caliber villains are coming in. I mean, and there's still a good number of folks that haven't been used in the Infinity Saga or the Phase 4 projects. I'm really curious because, you know, on the one hand, we know that it's like a 4chan kind of a site, right? That it's like this like online like troll website. But on the other hand, like we know that Klaue was associated with it. And we know the comics roots. So, like, I wonder what that will ultimately wind up looking like in this show, or if we're even going to get the full reveal in this show.
It totally has to be Stearns as the leader at this point, right? I just rewatched Hulk. The typing even looked the same.
Yeah.
Like the interface. Right. He goes by Hulk King. It looked like Mr. Green to me. The last line that he types, just for the record, is the next phase of the plan ready to go? Signed, Hulk King. That, the intelligentsia thing, the fact that you brought up Stearns as the leader a few episodes ago, it feels like there's a lot of hints at that, and that'd make a lot of sense. Here's another guy who was fascinated by the Hulk. Like, he loved it. Trying to recreate it would make so much sense to me.
And again, I would, like, that's one that I would almost love that he's been in the background just
working on that serum.
and like taking advantage of like to your point, the things that we knew about him were his obsession with the Hulk, he was a biological genius on some levels, and we always saw them communicating via this like encrypted chat. So it would kind of make sense if they were going to sort of try to take this idea of the intelligentsia and make it unique and make it, you know, interesting and relevant in a 2022 way to engage. Like, it's kind of a genius way to engage with yet another level of the conversation around a project like She-Hulk, while also, I think, creating some interesting plot opportunities.
Here's what I would love about it, and this is tiny, but Bruce talked so confidently to Jen that this basically couldn't be recreated. He's worked forever. He's worked for 15 years in a lab to turn into Professor Hulk. He's tried to get rid of it. He's tried to figure out what it takes to go into this serum. And Bruce is supposed to be one of the smartest people in the world. Mm-hmm. Bruce is so okay with this or comfortable with Jen that he leaves. Like, he clearly doesn't think that Jen is in that much danger with this serum being recreated. Otherwise, why would he peace out, right? So if there ever was somebody who could be working to redo the serum, I kind of love that it would actually be him, and that he has been working on it since The Incredible Hulk, because that would, one, explain Bruce thinking, like, no one else can do this because I can't do it, so no one else can do it. Well, if there was someone, it would make sense for it to be this guy. And I think it'd be shocking to Bruce if he found out. But also, I think he'd believe it, and that's what I kind of like about it. Like, for example, I think contrast that to The Falcon and Winter Soldier, how we just got that one quick offhanded scene where there's another guy that is recreating the serum.
Right.
And it's like, we don't even know who this is. And it's like, oh, he can just do it? They've been trying to do this for 50 years, and he can just do it. That's not as believable to me as this guy dedicating his entire life to recreating it and finally getting, like, a taste of it with Jen, you know, and that being the missing ingredient or whatever. That's more believable.
Yeah, well, and the fact that, you know, in the comics, the leader, and I'd be curious to see how this is ultimately visualized in the MCU. But I mean, you've probably seen pictures like this, like massive, like chef's hat shaped head. And the idea is that it's the foil to Bruce, where he's kind of at least traditionally all brawn, no brains. And that's where all the gamma power goes. The leader is the opposite, where it's all gone to his brain and made him, like, super, super smart. So, like, we know that in the MCU, Stearns was already capable of engaging with the same kind of data that Bruce does.
True.
And now he should technically be smarter than Bruce.
If it follows that same.
If it follows the same trajectory. Yeah.
Okay, here's my last point/question, and this is my first concern or negative that I had. I'm loving the show, so everything is grading out very well for me. So it'll be interesting to actually rank this thing in a few weeks when we're done. But you joked about this in your preface to the episode. I guess I'm starting to wonder, why is everybody so mean to Jen? Did I miss something on a plot front? Why, for example, the entire wedding is there to, like, make fun of her. The joke about Mario Kart, I get it's funny, and maybe they're just using it as a comedic thing of, like, poor Jen. But if they're just using it as a poor Jen thing, a couple of people said this on our Slack, and I think I'm starting to believe this, it's becoming a little much, the poor Jen thing. Like, she's clearly very smart, funny, attractive, and it's just not very natural feeling that she'd get made fun of this much. I bought it a little bit earlier when she was struggling to date, and I get that. That's totally relatable for a lot of people. I'm married right now and I'm not dating, but like for a lot of people, I get it. I think Katrina was the one that was like, yeah, the first scene when Jen walks in and she's talking about all her jobs, like that felt really relatable, that like family and friends will be like, oh, but are you dating anyone? That's what I was curious about. I get that. But then the next couple stuff with like the laundry, am I missing something plot wise or is it just like they're trying to be like pour on?
Just to confirm you're not dating anyone.
I am dating my wife. She just walked in and said, you're not dating anyone. I am dating my wife. Yes. Thank you, Annika. Do you know what I'm saying?
Is it just a little much
or am I missing something or like, can we move off that point a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it's the first time that I think I've had that thought. And so I don't necessarily view it as part of a larger trend, but as you're saying it, I see why you would. I know we had some people write in about like, are people ever really that mean, you know, about like the dating episode. And, you know, we had kind of as many people write in saying like, wow, this is crazy because this is exactly what it's like going on like Tinder dates.
Right, because we were kind of like, no, people aren't this mean. But yeah, we got some messages where people were like, no, this is what dating is like in your 30s.
And so, I think that this episode is, there were several elements like that, like the line you were just talking about with her career and them just wanting to know about the relationship, where I was like, they are, even the whole idea and the way they talk about the wedding and what goes into that and how draining it is. Like they're trying to talk about things that people at this particular stage of life have to do and then how it kind of complicates it when you're specifically like a single woman. And I think that that's why they're playing into so much like how bad it all is. But I had the same thought where I was like, okay, but why is she the one that has to walk the dog?
Okay, so then plot-wise, I'm thinking to myself, the only reasonable explanation is that Titania is in on it from the beginning. Is that possible that Titania was like, hey, invite Jen, we'll make fun of her? Because like even Jen was like, I haven't talked to this girl since high school. I don't know why she's inviting me. That's the only thing I can think of, is that they're like, hey, let's make her miserable.
That's fair.
But if it's not that, then I totally agree with what we're saying, where it's like, man, like she has to walk the dog. She has to pick up for everybody. And like, even when she's finally having a sweet conversation with Josh, like it gets immediately interrupted by the bride. It's like, she's aware that like, oh, Jen's like doing well, quick, break it up, mess it up. I don't know.
You know, that would make sense, I guess, because I mean, like we know that she's, I mean, Titania is clearly at the wedding somehow. I mean, she's like, she has some connection with these people. And
I literally told you this wasn't over. I like that line.
I'm going to have to rewatch it. I only got to watch this episode once today, but I'm going to rewatch it through that lens and see if that holds up. Because my only other thought was that, like, this was somehow, you know, so the Josh thing, like you mentioned earlier, like he's probably bad, but you hope he isn't. That was my other thought, is like, okay, someone put Josh in the position to kind of sweet talk her, which in some way would rely on her having a bad time and being in a spot where she needed someone to talk to like that.
Okay, true.
So then I was like, is there someone that kind of pulled those strings, or is that the same person that's pulling the Titania strings?
Yeah, maybe Titania is just working with the leader and they're like, and they're just, hey, messing, just go with out there, make her miserable.
Oh, true, but that's a good point. Yeah, maybe it's both. Maybe it's Titania through that. Because I mean, that feels valid. Like the kind of people at this wedding seem like they would be the kind of people that would be easily swayed by someone like Titania.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that that's the beauty of that is, I feel like it's something we'll know within an episode or, well, at least by the end of the series. Like, I think that if we never hear anything else about that, then it was just kind of a maybe unbelievable plot element. But I think that we'll hear something one way or the other about the involvement, because I think that there's something going on with Josh based on the way that camera pans out.
Last interesting thought on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just to paint a more complete picture for our audience, we have gotten a handful of messages from people either on Slack or on Instagram or on our website of people saying that part of the reason the show hasn't been for them is because of that, is because Jen is clearly attractive. She's clearly fun. She's clearly funny. She's smart. She's kind. And it's just not that believable to them to have someone lack that much confidence and be put down, et cetera. I've never really subscribed to that, because I think sometimes, even on the outside, when someone is all those things, it doesn't mean they can't still be struggling with self-confidence inside. Like, there are people like that, that are still struggling with those things, even though they are beautiful and funny and smart and powerful. And, you know, so that doesn't ever turn me off. You know, it's not like I'm like, oh, I can't connect with the show because of that.
Right.
So it's interesting that this is the first time now in episode 6 where that radar went off, where it's like, okay, she's so down on herself. And I think it more just comes back to, this is me speaking to myself now, it comes back to what we've talked about from the comics, where it's this struggle between, am I Jen? Am I She-Hulk? Like, where do I get my worth? Is it from being Jen? Is it from being She-Hulk? Can I be confident in being Jen if She-Hulk is so great? And maybe originally not wanting to be She-Hulk and just wanting to be Jen, and now realizing that She-Hulk's pretty great and I don't want to be Jen. Like, I get that struggle. So that's probably where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I do like.
Which I like. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why it ultimately didn't really bother me. Like, I felt that, but I also, you know, like, that's just a trope to me often. Like, there are these like bully characters in things like this that I just, and would be so surprised to find in real life. But again, that's when Candace would say I'm being naive. But regardless of that side of it, I really like the way they're handling that. I like seeing Jen wrestle with that in real time. Like, she was so excited to show up as She-Hulk, and then she has to wear the like She-Hulk dress, but not as She-Hulk. You know, this moment she's actually finally excited to embrace this thing that she's normally not embarrassed by, but not really wanting to fully associate with. And then like the one time when it's a positive, she's not able to, which, okay, by the way though, now that I'm saying that, it's interesting. Okay. On the one hand, it would be totally believable, right? If there's nothing more to it, because it made sense. It was her friend's wedding, and her being there as She-Hulk would kind of upstage her. But it is interesting that one, we get in the previously on, you know, the guy not being able to inject her.
I see where you're going.
And the first thing that happens when she comes to the wedding is she's like, okay, but you can't be She-Hulk. Like, you've got to be Jen.
Maybe that they think they can only get her blood if it's Jen. Like, get her before she turns. Or maybe if they get her drunk enough, she won't remember how to turn, and that's when you can actually grab her blood. Or maybe there's a transition. You got to grab it right as she's transitioning. Because here's another thing I caught in the second watch. Josh, when she says, like, and by the way, I'm super strong. I have superpowers. And she's drunk and she says that. She's like, but I can't do it here. Josh's like, I'd love to see it. That's what he says. Yeah. So was he sent to, like, capture a specific moment where it's like before she's She-Hulk? Or, like, you know what I mean? I don't know. So, yeah, oh, you're right. But you, Kyle, and I are talking this through and, like, figuring it out right now.
But that's the okay, you've watched it more recently, but isn't that how it works with the Incredible Hulk? Like, whenever, not, I know it's a different thing, but whenever they're trying to turn Bruce back permanently, isn't the whole trick to catch him, like, at, like, in the process of hulking out?
Right, and then quick give him a transfusion.
Right.
That's a good point. So if it is the same guy, maybe he thinks that's the trick. That's the technology, is we got to get her when she's, like, changing.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah, interesting. We could either be going, like, wild way far down a random road. I don't know. I think the thing is, ultimately, this is one where I think I would be okay either way. Because just the tone of the show, it's so much of it is painting kind of overly, like, they're caricatured versions of realities, and it's satire at points. And so, you know, if this is just like an over the top depiction of like, you know, being a single woman in her 30s at a wedding for a weekend like this, then I'm okay with that. But I do think that, like, at least parts of it aren't. And my read was that, I thought Josh maybe is one of the Wrecking Crew guys that went after her. Was that your read?
Like an actual one of the four? Or
I
just
kind of thought so.
Maybe the guy wearing a guy wearing a mask that tried to get the guy who used the needle was wearing a full mask.
I thought that because they made a point to say, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, because this was from like a brief previously on, but I just thought it was interesting that they made a point to say, like, hey, Thunderball, did you get any, like, were you able to get the sample? And he's like, no, her, you know, I couldn't break through her nasty green skin. And I just thought it was interesting that they made a point to put in the name at that exact moment. Like, I always find it interesting what they edit and don't edit out of previously on.
Interesting.
So it made me think, like, honestly, as soon as he showed up in the episode, my initial thought was, is that that one guy that it, like, weirdly hung on for a second in the recap? But it could be totally wrong. Like, I was not paying enough attention to know, like, what that guy's voice sounded like, or like what his ethnicity is, because, like, in the comics, Thunderball is a black man, which is something that Ta-Nehisi Coates does a lot with in his Black Panther run. So I don't know, but I do think there's something weird going on there for sure.
So do I. I think we're onto something. I love that we just figured that out. Yeah, or we're way off and we're going to look so stupid. I am really enjoying the show still. Nothing has changed for me. I'm still laughing a lot. I'm laughing more than Onika, but I am laughing a lot. I also like these layers we're getting into, and I think this is the pacing I'm okay with a big bad.
Right.
Like, this doesn't feel like a big bad as far as world taking over. But we're on episode 6, and we still have not really seen anybody, and it's just a tiny little hint, WandaVision style, of his hands, you know, working with the needle. And I'm loving it. I need to give a couple of their shout outs. We have yet to shout out the music, but I'm falling in love with the main theme, the one that I play every episode on this podcast. Yeah. But also, there was some really cool music. Go back and listen when the immortal man jumps out of the window and crashes in the car. There's a really cool, like, choir
I heard
sound.
That actually. Yeah.
And then the introduction to the sinister villain stuff at the end was a dope, like, synth. Yeah. And it was really cool. So this was one of the first times where it really grabbed me. Shout out there. I'm loving the chemistry between almost everybody at this point. Not a lot of stuff pulls me out or feels out of place. And I think the only reason that today's episode is going to be a let's go plus is just because I'm not sure this was the most pivotal episode, and my radar went off about that Jen stuff.
Yeah.
But still very, very high score for me.
I was just sitting here thinking, you know, I mean, it's different, right? It's a different metric. They're going on at a different pace than the other Disney Plus shows other than WandaVision.
And lastly, by the way, sorry. The CGI on her was extra good this episode. Did you agree?
Yeah.
Like, I think whenever they can really zoom in on her face, they can show the texture stuff.
Right.
And it just works a lot better than when she's in the background at the courtroom or walking down the steps.
Right.
It's like when they can really like hone in on it. It seems like, I don't know, they got it dialed in here.
Yeah.
Keep going.
No. I agree. I was just going to say, I kind of was taking stock today and realizing, yeah, I mean, for me personally, you know, now getting to the number of episodes we've gotten for every Disney Plus show but WandaVision, it's up there in how much I've just really enjoyed it. Now, I mean, are there things that are sticking in my mind the same way that, like, you know, episode 4 of Moon Knight did, or you know, like episode 5 of Falcon Winter Soldier? Like, no, but at the same time, I think it's not supposed
different
to, right?
Genre.
Like, it's a different,
yeah,
kind
different
of show.
Genres, so hard.
And,
yep.
And so, but it, in terms of quality, in terms of me, like, you know, it's getting to a point now, like I was kind of with Ms. Marvel after episode 2, where I was like, I'm feeling so good about this show, and I keep waiting to kind of to see if it's going to take a dip, and it just isn't. You know, like, I think...
No, it's not.
It's here, maybe the best way for me to say it is so far, my experience of She-Hulk has just been... It's good, and then there are just some episodes I prefer. Like,
sure,
there are some plot lines I really like, but like, I'm having a really hard time finding much that is like being handled poorly. You know, I mean, we've talked about the CGI here and there,
totally.
But that kind of aside, I'm just like, and by the way, Candace is loving it. This is the first time that Candace is fully caught up, is staying caught up on the same. Kind of at the same speed I am on a Disney Plus show since WandaVision.
And I predicted that, by the way.
You did.
In the preview episode.
Yeah. She's really loving it. She's been an evangelist for it, trying to get other people to watch. And that makes me happy because, you know, like, for whatever reason, there have been a lot of shows that have not
held her
really
attention.
Held, yeah, or caught. I mean, Ms. Marvel was one, and then, like, I think I said on the podcast, she watched episode 1 and 2 and then came back. She was with me when I watched the final episode, and she was like, oh, yeah, I missed, like, 3 through 5, and I was like, oh.
Stop.
And so, but, you know, like, yeah, it's great. Like, that's why it makes me excited because, again, you know, it's like, it's a big umbrella, and it should be, and that's My ideal for Marvel Studios, I think, is that, like, make it such that, like, what we talked about with Ms. Marvel, like, yeah, if you're not into, you know, this kind of more YA feeling thing, that's totally fine. You don't need to feel guilty for that. Just, like, don't watch it. And, like, you go watch, like, the new Captain America movie that's going to be the, like, political paranoia thriller. Like, that's probably more your scene. But if you are into that kind of stuff, here it is, and it's really great, and it's like in the Marvel world, and that's fun. And so, like,
which for the record,
She-Hulk
is why I'm becoming more and more okay with the zaniness of Love and Thunder, for example.
Yes,
it's like,
yeah,
I was watching it, going like, we don't have a lot of this currently. Just way out there, zany,
right.
Like space,
right.
Goats, monsters, like, and I'm okay with it because it's like, yeah, it all fits under the umbrella. That's okay.
Yeah, which. In fairness, it is a. I'm grading. You know,
what is your grade for this episode, by the way?
Yeah, so my grade for this episode, I think, is actually a let's freaking go minus.
Okay. Wow.
And that's only because I really like the way that they introduced the villain element here with the intelligentsia. Like, it felt really natural. Like, that's a big.
Yeah, I could be convinced.
For a show like this.
I could be convinced to raise mine to that for sure.
You know, it's like I think they handled that well. And the way that they've, like, planted the seeds, you know, with that scene where she's kind of mugged on the way home almost, and then however Titania's played in, like, just the pacing, I think, has been excellent. And it has not felt weirdly forced. We haven't had a left turn so far. And, like, to the point where I'm not, mm-hmm. like, I truly was not upset to not have Daredevil because I'm like,
right.
I'm really, I like how this is going. And even the fact that, you know, they have the conversation with us about the pacing of the show, just.
and in a really fun way, don't you kind of know what to expect? Like in a good way, not yeah. in like a, I don't know what's coming, but like I'm turning it on tonight with Annika, knowing like I'm going to enjoy this, and I right. know I'm going to find some things really funny, and I'm going to get a lot of Easter eggs. I don't know. I just like know ahead of time.
Yeah.
It's that consistent. It's going to be fascinating and so difficult to actually rank when you compare them because it's just so different. Like what you said, do I just prefer the like thriller thing? You know, my favorite movies like Inception. Right. Like, yeah, I think I kind of do a little bit, like not knowing what's going to happen.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean, like, again, this is where I'm trying to get into the rhythm of breaking it into like preference versus like critic.
Right.
Because
right.
critically, I think this is doing a ton of stuff right. And I'm right. enjoying it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying like, when you're going to rank them, it's going to be so hard.
Yeah.
Because it's been so consistent.
Man,
and maybe they'll land the plane. Uh-huh. Like the, you know, we're always scared the plane's going to crash. Maybe it will land so spectacularly that we'll be like, oh my gosh, you have right. to see all of She-Hulk. Maybe, you know, something.
Man, I mean, I've just been, this is a series that I'm really, really excited for us to do our reflection on, in part because I often feel like, you know, after we do our finale episode, you know, when we get to our reflection, it's sort of the same things because we're talking about how stories have closed and they wind up being different conversations because something's always come up. But this is one where because like this show has had at least so far, like really six individual stories. So like it's going to be really fun to reflect on this as not just, you know, a 9-part story with one episode that ends everything. But I think as actually kind of at least, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 stories, depending on kind of what the finale situation looks like. And sure. that's even sort of a unique thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious and I'm really excited to keep following on this journey you're on with the like preference versus
yeah.
critic thing.
It's hard.
I've just been thinking about that a lot, about how like, I think we're in such this interesting, this is my final thought here as we close, like because you just brought up Love and Thunder again. And again, by the way, I love Love and Thunder. This is not me defending that movie in particular, but I think it's an interesting test case, and maybe She-Hulk is too. Like, we're at this spot, and you know, as people that talk about Marvel stuff, which is arguably the most corporate art that there is currently, but, you know, we're at this spot where because of that, because art via film and TV has become an industry, there is sort of this sense through, like, audience testing and screeners of what like, a good thing is that people are going to respond to. And this is going to sound
quotes.
So much
He's
like...
He's doing quotes, by the way. Good.
This is going to sound like... Notice that I put it in
yeah,
quotes.
Yeah, he did. That, I noticed it.
That this is going to sound so much like a freshman kid in their first intro to philosophy class in college thought.
I love it.
But like obviously art is inherently subjective, right? Like it is something that like I think that there is a loss with the degree to which we have tried to
make
put
it objective.
Things broadly into buckets, you know, because it's like even people like Siskel and Ebert, like some of the kind of like peak film critics of the 20th century era, it wasn't necessarily, okay, well, your job as a critic is to lump it into, is it good or is it bad? Or like, does it have this many stars or this many stars? Like, I think part of the point of film criticism and television criticism is to just respond to it. And in doing so, hopefully kind of deepen other people's experience. But in boiling all that down to the is it good or is it bad thing, and then people watch something and are, I think, already formulating, like we're trained now to have like our reviews of things, not just me and you, but like everybody. And I wonder how much it has kind of lessened the actual independent experience of watching something like this.
As a music producer, I've struggled with this a lot. When is something bad, like objectively bad?
Right.
Versus right. a lot of genres, people are able to take something that I would view as objectively bad, like a vocal that's a little out of tune.
Mm-hmm.
But in a certain genre, it makes it unbelievable.
Right.
And so is Bob Dylan objectively bad because mm-hmm. he doesn't sing great in pitch?
Right.
No.
Right.
Some
right.
people would say it's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
And I struggle with that all the time. Like I'm recording with somebody and there's a little bit of a flub on a guitar. How do I know when to leave that because it adds like awesome character versus, oh, that's wrong. Take it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that to say it's the same, I think, here. I think you're yeah. right. Because like, for example, I watch Multiverse of Madness and I say the montage of Wanda is just bad.
Right.
It's objectively bad.
Right.
But what does it mean? There is not an objective to that. He was doing what he was trying to do
yeah.
well. That doesn't make it objectively bad. It just makes it that
yeah.
I don't prefer it. But that's like saying Bob Dylan's objectively bad. No, he's not.
There is
no objective bad.
I was thinking about Multiverse of Madness 2, and I was thinking about the go back to hell line with Rachel
right,
McAdams.
Because I said, I do it all the time. Like, that was objectively bad.
Well, and we talked about that in our episode as being such kind of an interesting dichotomy.
But then you
got
to be careful to almost be like, can you ever say anything's bad otherwise?
Well, but see, that's where I think it gets interesting, because I do feel like you can assess the quality of, for instance, like...
It's like if a high school band sent me a record that's clearly like they don't know a lot about music...
Yeah.
You could be like, okay, like that's the quality factor is missing.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, I think that, a bad acting performance is a bad acting performance. Like if you don't,
art from a different angle.
Right. I mean, and it could be like, and I think that there are layers to things, and it depends on the level of artistry that you're kind of sensing. But again, it's all subjective. But I think that like, even... like that moment in Doctor Strange, like the go back to hell, I think is so instructive, because even there, yeah, maybe you're right. You could see someone saying that's Rachel McAdams maybe acting in a way that feels over the top. And you could see someone saying that's Michael Waldron writing in a way that's over the top. And then you could finally see someone saying that Sam Raimi shot that in a way that seems over the top, because it's all over the top. And then on the flip side, you have people like me that are like, yes, all three of those things are over the top, and I loved it because I know exactly what it was doing and I was there for it, And so like that is like, I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer to certain things like that. And that's one of the reasons that I love how this podcast started, which was, let's take these movies that a lot of people don't necessarily know like how to enjoy the way that we've enjoyed them.
Well, and I love that you brought up the origin of this podcast, because we've been talking about things that are objectively bad, but let's talk about Endgame for a second, about, it being objectively good in that it moved people in the audiences so strongly
right.
that other filmmakers famously called Robert Downey Jr. to ask, like, what is the secret sauce here that you're able to elicit this kind of reaction from the audience, meaning enough other experts were like, what are they doing that makes mm-hmm. this so successful? And so in some ways, I think they're kind of almost asking like, how is this so objectively good?
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. Which I had this thought the other day.
We have to go.
I promise this is my last thought. This is my last thought. But I had this, we were talking about this the other day because we were watching a movie that I can talk about later, but it's like another big budget movie. And I just noticed that like the acting was just not great. And it struck me like that is one thing, not always, but that's one thing that I think we have to thank RDJ for in the MCU, is I feel like he set the bar so high so early that even though like early Hemsworth is not great, early Evans is like fine, but gets a lot better. Like, but still, like, there's been that, like, whenever you have people come in, even in cameo roles, like, I've noticed that in some movies, when people, even big names, show up, you can tell that they're phoning it in. And they have created a culture on these Marvel lots where that's just not what happens.
Okay, then my last thought is, in that Thor Love and Thunder Assembled. They start off by doing flashbacks to his original audition tape for Thor. It looks crazy, fun. So long ago. But they have a talking head of Chris Hemsworth saying exactly that, that his motivating factor for Ragnarok was he was looking around at all his other Avengers and feeling like they were all killing it with their characters and moving their characters and bringing their characters places. And he started feeling like, why can't I move my character? Like, why am I not doing anything different with this character? And I thought that was fascinating in context of what you're saying, where he actually literally looked around and went like, he didn't say this name, but he was like thinking, Robert does all this stuff with Iron Man and Tony Stark. And Chris is doing all this cool stuff with Winter Soldier and the way that got reinvented. And like, yeah, I mean, he's looking around going, we have to do something with Thor.
Right. That's cool. Wow. Full circle.
So to tie that all up. Yeah. Wow.
Big Love and Thunder episode today.
Yeah. Sorry. Wow. Three episodes left of She-Hulk. Let's hear from our audience. Are we going to get Daredevil next episode? Is it going to be the leader? Is it going to be Samuel Stearns? I'm excited to find out. Really excited to find out.
And remember, we talked about how episode one was originally supposed to be kind of episode eight in this series. So I'm really curious now. I mean, the way this show is originally going to end has been shifted somewhat. So I feel like it's made me extra curious to see what that looks like.
No doubt. Thank you all so much for your support. All the typical stuff here, please. If you don't already subscribe to this podcast, please do that. Check out our partners, Epic Hero Shop, Organic Price Books, Squarespace. Check out our website, theffwpodcast.com. Follow us on social media at theffwpodcast, and we will try to respond to all the messages we get there, although we're both really busy, but we do try to get to them. Thank you so much. We love you all. We'll see you next week. Talking She-Hulk Episode 7 here on Friends From Work.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.